Hello, Pod. That was a bit cockney, wasn't it? All right, Pod. Hello, Pod. Welcome to the latest spoiler special. Hey! Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the latest in our series of spoiler special podcasts. This one is recorded in a brand new studio. Wow, it's exciting. And it's also dedicated to the animation triumph that is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. How exciting. Because I was going to say this is the latest entry in the MCU, but it isn't. It isn't.
No.
Or is it?
Or is it?
Well, yeah,
let's discuss it.
We will discuss it. Join me over the next 45 minutes or so to discuss the film are two of my finest spider colleagues of such lethal spider cunning. First of all, we have a Ben.
We do.
We have an actual Ben on this podcast.
Are you an Uncle Ben?
I am. Please don't shoot me.
Oh, God. He's doomed.
Are you an Uncle Ben?
I'm an Uncle Ben.
You're so young.
Yeah.
It's Ben Travis, by the way, everybody. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Travis.
Hello.
Hello, and hello to James Travis and to Ada Travis, my niece, if she's listening. I mean, I don't think she is, because she is 3 years old.
She should not be listening
she
to this.
She should not be listening to this. No, that. Definitely not.
No, we'll be saying fuck bombs and C words and all sorts of stuff. You can't, but only one.
So. There we go. You've used it already.
What?
Yeah.
A fuck bomb.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, it's two now.
There it is.
That's R-rated. Definitely no room for Ada on this podcast.
Nope.
But welcome, Uncle Ben. You won't last too long,
no.
But at least you will teach us a valuable lesson yeah. along the way. That's good. Next up, we have our very own geek queen, not Aunt May. You'd be delighted to know.
No,
are you an aunt? You are an aunt.
I am an aunt. Just recently, yes.
Okay.
My nephew is currently dressed as Elf, as Buddy the Elf.
Wow.
Right now.
From the hit motion picture.
Buddy.
It is, of course, Helen O'Hara. How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
Is that a lie? It feels like a lie.
It's a little bit of a lie. I have a sore thing. But I am, of course, related to a Spider-Man. So I'm very proud to be here today representing my spider family.
Of course. Well, we'll get into that.
We will.
We'll get into that later on because first up, two things. One, this is a spoiler special. So if you haven't seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and you don't want to know everything that's going on, why the hell are you listening to this podcast? But also, stop listening to it. Go and see the film. It's in cinemas right now. And then come back and listen to the podcast, okay? And then all the spoilers will be yours because we're going to get into it. Third act revelations, major deaths, and there are major deaths, and all sorts of stuff. The second thing that will delay us talking about the film is an interview with the film's producers and one of the co-writers, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the geniuses behind the Jump Street movies, the Lego movie, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and they were very, very instrumental in putting this film together as well. When they came into London last week, I had a good old, very, very fun chat with them. We got into it on some major spoilers, some stuff we didn't really get into either, which gives us plenty of stuff to get into once you hear this interview. So here we are, me talking to Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I can't remember who speaks first, which doesn't really help you guys. Anyway, do enjoy it.
Thanks, Chris.
I like to bring clarity to the proceedings.
It's a real ant or deck moment there.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a way to help you out. Phil Lord wears glasses. Chris Miller does not wear glasses. So that should help you figure out who's speaking. Enjoy?
You're awful.
All right, so we should get into this because you guys
okay,
are
going to
be,
yeah, right,
be hooked away.
Yes.
Chris, do you prefer Christopher officially?
Doesn't matter, either Chris or Christopher, either way.
Fantastic.
Really?
Whatever
yeah.
floats your boat.
Who calls you Christopher in real life? In, yeah.
I mean, it is official,
I've never
it?
Called you Christopher in my whole life.
Yeah. Not even when you're mad with him?
Christopher Miller.
I never.
I think I would be like, Chris Robert Miller. I would never do that.
That just sounds weird.
I've called you Exofer.
That's right. That was my.
That's about it. Just because I love you. Because I want to give you kisses and hugs all the time.
There you go.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right. We're delighted to be joined in this very, very special Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse spoiler special. I used the word special twice, the same sentence. That's how special this special is. By the producers of the film and co-writer, in one case, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I went with Chris.
That's great.
I hope it hasn't
We're close
you.
Now. We have an intimacy
oh gosh,
right here.
Yeah.
I feel I've antagonized you in some
yes.
way by doing that, but we'll try and get past it.
He hates the word Chris.
loathes it. So I'm not going to say my own name during the rest of this
yes,
podcast.
Right. Okay, well, tell me more, Chris.
My
no.
Oh, no. This is a tremendous movie. I love this movie. And one of the things I loved about this movie, and this isn't a spoiler thing, I just want to gush at you for a little bit, is
I love this interview
that
so far.
It looks unlike any mainstream animated film I've ever seen. Was that the, from the off, was that the idea that you could exploit what animation could do with this?
It really was. From the very beginning, 4 years ago, Sony came to us and said, what about doing an animated Spider-Man movie? And we said, well, let us think about it. We went back and thought, well, how could you do something that felt original and fresh and new and interesting and gave audiences something to be worth paying money to see in a theater? And two things came to mind. One was could tell the Miles Morales story. Mm-hmm. And the other one was that you could use animation as a medium to tell a story in a way that felt like you were walking inside the pages of a comic book. We didn't know actually how to achieve that. We just thought that it would look neat if we could.
Right. All we had to do was make it look like nothing had ever looked before.
Yeah, that's easy.
Piece of cake. But for then someone else to do it.
Sony said yes and kind of called our bluff, said, okay, sure, that sounds great. We're like, oh, really? And then we had to figure out how to do it. So we called up some talented people and they all said, that sounds awesome. I don't know how to do it.
How are you going
to
do that?
But let's try. And then many years later, it happened beyond what we could have imagined.
Never a doubt, Chris.
Never a doubt. Always certain, never in doubt.
Nailed on from the start.
That's true. Another hole in one.
Let's get into some of the spoiler stuff now. Mm-hmm. Now the preamble is out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Guys. The movie ends with a dedication to Stan Lee and Steve Ditko.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the first 37 minutes a few weeks ago, and I was touched even then by Stan Lee's cameo, and it's taken on extra significance since. Can you talk about that and what that means to you now?
Well, you know, we were 10 years old in a comic book shop when we first got to read Stan's writing and feel his message to us, which was that we were part of a community of fans, and that we were welcome, and that exclamation points were fair game, as many of them as you want. and that message of inclusion and really empowerment was formative for us, and we really wanted to honor that in the movie, because Stan and Steve Ditko are the godparents of all of these characters, and they created something that was really radical, which is that a superhero doesn't have to be a god from on high. A hero maybe ought to be somebody who's just like us, and turning it from turning it into a message of total empowerment for the reader. And so that was so powerful that we felt like the movie had to have a role for him that was more significant than him being like the bus driver or something.
Yeah,
and so as a team, when we came up with the idea that he would give Miles his mask, that felt right. And obviously we recorded it with Stan, and we thought of all this stuff long before, you know, he got ill, and it just was always touching. And so the fact that he passed away right before the movie came out, his appearance in the movie is still really consistent with a tribute.
Yeah, but the movie also feels like a real tribute to Ditko as well, not just in terms of the representation of Spider-Man himself and how he moves and the way he looks, but the way it goes full trippy at the end. I mean,
yeah, it's really psychedelic.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm a huge fan of Doctor Strange. It was probably the first comic I ever read, and certainly the first one I collected consciously. And, you know, we've always loved that work. And if you watch the movie carefully, there's, you know, some comic book pages in the sequence when Miles figures out that he's Spider-Man. And they are drawn specifically to look like a hybrid of Steve Ditko and John Romita. And so they have this like really studious antique, you know, nostalgia to them, and that's all because we were all just big fans of all of those artists, and we wanted the movie to represent all those different styles in one way or another.
Where did the conceit come from of introducing each Spider-Man with a little recap, a little comic booky recap.
That started in the first draft of the screenplay. Mm-hmm. There was it opened with Peter, because we kind of wanted to fake you out and make you think this was a typical Spider-Man origin narrative, and then introduce Miles kind of as a counterpoint. And I can't remember, I think at some point we started doing those flashbacks in the screenplay early on. And then when we were away for a minute, you know, Rodney took that and ran with it.
Right. And I think making it feel like by the end, Miles gets his own version of that. He gets to tell his own flashback story or flash present variation on that theme.
The underused flash present.
Yes.
I think it might just be the present.
Yeah, and it feels like it's his. He's earned his stripes as a Spider-Man at that moment, and that was sort of a new thing that came. I'm saying new, it's probably been around for a year and a half, but we've been working on this thing for 4 years. So that sort of idea of using that as a variations on a theme to show how we're all the same and how we're all different was something that I don't think we had really thought about in the very earliest drafts. It was sort of like a fun stylistic way to get information out of it that became more and more thematic as we worked on it.
Mm. And in the Ultimate Verse, Aaron Davis, the Prowler, is Miles's uncle from the off, but it's very much a twist in this film, because I presume you're also thinking that most people won't have read the comics, so it will floor a lot of people, I think.
Yes, when you watch it with an audience, you know, the aficionados are know it's coming and they're excited when the reveal. But I would say at least 2/3 of the audience, there's like a gasp of surprise when they find out that his uncle is the guy that's been chasing him the whole time.
And it almost doesn't matter if you know or not, because you're watching the movie from Miles' point of view, and then you wind up being devastated for him, because it means that his relationship with his uncle has changed forever.
Mm-hmm. And a relationship between the brothers has changed forever as well.
That's right.
The Prowler meets his, Aaron meets his demise in a different way from the comic books in this one, in that Kingpin shoots him. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that and what that means, that choice to put that in the Kingpin's hands?
Well, I mean, the big move was to make sure that it was something that Aaron made a conscious decision that he wanted to protect his nephew, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a very moving choice that he makes. He realizes the situation that he's in, and he makes a choice to support his nephew. And ultimately for Miles, what's important is, you know, in each one of these stories, they haven't really fully become Spider-Man until someone close to them has died, and they feel some culpability in that. So that was sort of part of the journey that he needed to go on. And having chosen Kingpin as the main bad guy, it seemed like he needed to be the one to pull the trigger on that, so that in the end, when Miles has a showdown with Kingpin, that it is like loaded with a lot of complicated feelings.
It's personal.
Exactly.
Yeah. In terms of Spider-Man as a whole, you always have the "with great power comes great responsibility" phrase. It hangs over Spider-Man like a shadow. There's even a bit where Peter B. Parker says, "Don't say that."
I've had enough of that. Thank you.
And here you twist it slightly with Miles, so it's about great expectations versus no expectations. Can you talk about that and modernizing that slant?
Well, we were really inspired by the idea that Miles didn't necessarily want this. And that was something that Brian talked a lot about. And
Brian Michael Bendis.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting that he got to, you know, and it's a great parallel to him being in this school that he doesn't ask to be in. Right? The idea that like his parents are thrilled and he's bummed.
Yeah.
Right? Because it means it's gonna be harder and he's gonna be challenged. And he's doing pretty great, right? He's in an equilibrium in his home school and his home neighborhood, and his parents are asking him to reach for more, and his teachers are asking him to reach for more, and here his uncle is saying, you know what, man, and especially in earlier drafts, he said, you don't need to like do that stuff. You can do whatever you feel like. And that's really seductive. And one of the reasons we wanted to tell this story is to remind young people, not only are you capable of great things, but we were expecting great things from you. And we need them because we all need
pretty messed up.
Yeah, we're going to need your help. We're all counting on you. That was important to us. And so, you know, this idea of dealing with high expectations seemed like it was germane to Miles' story. You know, we had a friend that we went to college with who grew up on the south side of Chicago, and she's like, what are you going to do after college? And we're like, oh, we're going to go to Los Angeles and be artists. And she's like, that's great. I don't have that luxury because because I have a responsibility to the people that got together to send me here. And I need to make money and I need to get a profession. And I don't have the safety net that you guys have. And that was really powerful for us to realize that was her mission. Was to honor the community that supported her while she, you know, went to this fancy school.
There's a couple of things throughout the movie I wanted to talk about specifically. 42. What is the significance of 42, apart from being the meaning of life?
So 42 is the lottery ball number that was Miles that gets him into the school, which is sort of a metaphor for the, you know, being chosen at random for something and having to rise up to the expectations. We asked Brian Bendis where it came from, and it was because it was Jackie Robinson's number. and so that's why he chose that number, and so we thought that was cool, and so the number 42 is littered throughout the movie, as I'm sure you noticed.
I spotted it a couple of times. I spotted it whenever Miles falls off the building onto a cab and knocks numbers off. And the spider, I think, is 42.
That's correct.
Yeah, his numbers come up. You know, it was important that he wasn't, it's not his birthright, this thing, right? It's a thing that happens to him against his will.
There's a lot in this movie that is left open to the imagination. You don't, unless I missed it, because entirely possible because I'm an idiot, you don't explain where the spider came from.
We say it's an Alchemax spider, and Alchemax is the company that that makes the collider. And when we were doing research into colliders, it turns out they use spider silk in making colliders somehow. But also the other idea that is never said was that they were first testing live beings on with a spider with the multiverse as like earlier tests that had happened, and they had gotten irradiated, and this spider was some spider that had come from another dimension in one of their early tests.
But basically the audience didn't care.
We had
all these explanations, and they were like, we know, we get it. There's
fine.
Science magic happens to the spider and it bites him. We know.
There are much more longer explanations.
Okay, interesting. Peter B. Parker is the main Peter in the film. I'm going to call the other one Peter A. Parker.
Okay.
is technically his middle initial, initial of both.
Benjamin, yes.
Yeah. But you know, they're all just A, B, C, D. Yeah. You know, you can do 26 of these.
It's true. It'll be totally fine. That's the idea.
We used to call him Burrito Peter because it seemed like he ate a lot of burritos.
And then we realized that people don't eat as many burritos in New York City. They really eat pizza.
So,
really? Not shawarma? Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. So you have Chris Pine is Peter A.
Slouch.
B. Parker.
Yes. Yes.
And his magic eyes.
Completing the full set of Chris's in the Marvel Universe.
Indeed.
That's right. Another, that enraging name, Chris, once again.
I know, here it comes back again.
Sorry.
Oh, we were trying to think of the ideal Spider-Man to contrast with Jake's Spider-Man.
And whose voice sounded the most handsome.
Yes, and someone who could be... Yeah, exactly. Handsome, funny, charming, and everything. And everything.
He's like Errol Flynn.
The guy can do anything. We asked him to sing Christmas songs, like Spider Christmas songs for us. And he did, and he has an amazing singing voice, too. I mean, the guy, come on.
Don't
you
be
gotta
surprised
have some flaws.
If you hear another Christmas song
it's
coming
true.
Your way someday soon.
It's
oh,
true.
My God. I'm ready. I'm writing the body is
ready. Spoiler show. We
it
might
is.
As well say
it's
that,
sublimely.
We have
lame.
What have you got? What have you got?
There's Spidey Bells. That's in the uh-huh. end credits. There's a longer version of that, and then there's a Up on the Housetop song that he also sings, which is really
it's great.
It's very
it
much
nails
what,
the tone
what
of
it would be if you asked Spider-Man to sing a Christmas song, right down the middle of the
yeah.
I'm very
yes,
excited.
It's not yes. funny so much as humorous.
Exactly.
So I think I noticed at one point that there's a box of cereal, and I think it's called Pitos. Is that right?
Spidey-O's. It's
Spidey-O's.
Called.
Okay, I couldn't see because it was okay.
Spidey-O's. No, in this movie, this is a fun spoiler thing.
Yeah.
There is no, I mean, there are the comic books, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of discussion and many, many, many hours of discussion about this, like the True Life Tales comic books.
Yeah.
But they have to change the information. So if you look very closely inside the comic books, his name isn't Peter
Billy.
Parker, it's
yeah.
Billy Barker.
crack that code.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, like who could it be?
Who
we don't know.
Who could it possibly be?
but that was how we got around the idea that there are comic books in this universe, but his secret identity hasn't been revealed to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they call him Pedios, that would really
I was going to say that's that yeah. was like
yeah,
what
no,
is
it's Spidey-O's. Yeah.
Spidey-O's. There were a lot more things that commercial tie-ins that he had been a part of, in, like,
yes.
including a movie
yes.
starring The Rock.
That's right. There was a version of him
and
where he's
different
like
drafts.
Super
Tom
muscular.
Cruise, yeah, and he just drove a sports car.
That's right.
And like had Uzis and stuff.
I'll say on that front, if you want, if you like, are thinking about it too much, like in the opening credits, he's at a. I guess what you think, a lunch date with Mary Jane when the car comes and he punches the
yeah,
car?
Right. Yeah. In
he's
his suit.
In his suit, in the full spider suit, kind of also kind of giving away, like, who's the guy having a date with Mary Jane?
It was reckless.
He's just, well, he's just interested. He's a nice guy.
That
exactly.
was the lunch where he learned the consequences of being out in public with loved ones.
Exactly.
A car might come in and almost smash her.
Exactly.
So that introduction obviously riffs a lot on the Raimi Spider-Man, mm-hmm. but he's not meant to be that Raimi Spider-Man.
That's
know that
correct.
There was talk
there were
about,
differences. He
yeah.
punches the car and it
he
blows
punches
up.
The car, yeah.
When he and MJ kiss, if you look closely, she's upside down and he's right side up.
The idea was that you have it's an amalgamation of all the different spider people throughout the years in canon and some of the most iconic moments from all of those
but in alt ways
in but twists on every single one of them, so it was always supposed to be sort of an uber Peter, I guess.
Yes.
And
with an Aunt May who
yes.
is fully aware of his secret, and he's built this
exactly.
sort of spider cave, which
exactly.
is amazing,
and she's like
yeah.
the cue to
yeah.
his bond, I guess. Yeah, so it was always it was always supposed to be its own universe version, but obviously paying tribute to all that have come before.
Okay, so is Peter B. Parker, Peter B. B. Parker, the Jake Johnson Peter Parker,
mm-hmm.
is he the Earth 616 Spidey?
He could be. He's from another dimension because he's not in the MCU. Peter, obviously,
yep.
that's Tom Holland.
Yeah,
he's in a universe where another one of these amalgamy type characters grew up at the same rate that
okay.
the Raimi Spider-Man.
Yeah, we
kind
of wrote him as though like the Raimi Spider-Man had gotten older.
Right.
And what would happen?
He would just become addicted to eating food. That's
he
what
would.
That's
he
what
would.
You exert a lot of use up a lot of calories. You know, fighting bad guys.
Oh my gosh. And the problem is then, so you get build up these eating habits over 20 years.
Those Olympic swimmers,
then your metabolism just drops through the floor.
It's really true.
Ask any pro athlete once they retire;
true.
It's brutal.
Doc Ock's password is really complicated.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, how would she remember that? I wouldn't remember.
She's
that.
A scientist.
She's sharp as a tack.
Yeah, I mean, she built an interdimensional collider. I think remembering a few numbers and letters would probably not be
not a big deal. Also, the security in that place had better be tip top.
Exactly. You're not just going to have her birthday.
You never know when
password.
Someone's going to be like rooting around trying to steal your secrets.
Exactly.
Be careful.
That's an amazing reveal. There's loads of twists in this film, but the reveal of what are you officially calling that character? Doc Ock?
Liv.
We call her Liv. Yeah.
What is her name in the credits?
I think it's Liv in the credits, just so as to not mess up anybody who's stumbling through
my
IMDb.
Favorite line that I laugh at every already. Time and nobody yeah I love it when Aunt May goes, oh great, it's Liv.
Exactly.
Cracks me up
but
every
yeah
time.
Yeah, if it isn't, we should try and get the IMDb thing fixed so that it can stay a surprise for people. Yeah, because I think it's a good, it's one of the,
we should,
one of the ones we've been,
I wonder
really
if we blew
about.
It in the crawl.
Yeah,
I literally don't remember. We kept some good secrets.
Yes,
like, interesting person number one.
Yes,
and two.
Yes, that
it's like it's like you've read my notes. It's amazing. Interesting person number one is Oscar Isaac.
That's because we were worried. You know what? You know why we beefed it? It's because we only protected the stuff that happened after the crawl.
Right.
Because we figured if you're watching the movie and the crawl comes up, yeah, you can call it whatever you want.
But then we didn't want to spoil if the reward of waiting around for the you know, the post credit scene.
Exactly.
So that's Miguel O'Hara.
It is.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2099. Who is interesting person number two? I didn't.
Oh, that is Lila. That is the his partner, the woman who it's a different take on that from
in the comics. She's like Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, looking.
It was a different time.
4 years ago when it was but yeah, so we wanted to do a kind of twist on that, but yeah, that was a fun dynamic.
And obviously there's a promise of future adventures with him down the line, unless he's just gonna be pointing at other Spider-Men.
I like the idea of like Midnight Run with 2099 and 67. That seems like a great movie. That's, by the way, pro tip, the same actor plays 67 and Green Goblin.
It's true, Yorma.
Insanely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, our friend Yorma.
Yorma from The Lonely Island.
Yeah, his voice is altered a little bit on the Goblin one and deepened somewhat, but he's a real treasure.
It was really fun. It was really fun to call him and be like, you need to do it worse.
Oh, the 67 one?
All right, speed round.
Here we go.
Aunt May, did you consider her being spider powered at any point? The Spider Mom.
She's sort of like halfway in between. We decided to make her kind of the Q of this world, and we kind of imagined that she built that whole lab, and she certainly builds those. Web shooters for Miles.
Because it's always kind of crazy that you're like, I was chosen at random to be a thing, but I also invented this technology that would make me a billionaire because I made super strong tensile silk that can shoot out of a very small thing and then dissolves after a couple hours.
Never runs out.
And you're like, oh, okay. I guess the same guy just so happened to be Bill invent a spider-themed piece of machinery that would be world-revolutionizing. So I think it's cool that Aunt May did it in this universe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's all, folks. Can Spider-Ham really say that legally? Difficult was it to clear that?
We're going to find out.
You can't imagine the long email chain that legal back and forth that we were stuck on. Trying to get that line in the movie,
I think some good old fashioned arm twisting.
Yes,
and the word "please" repeated
indeed
many times.
Well, we have a nice relationship with Warner Brothers. You know, we do the Lego movies with them, and and we love working with them. So
I think it's a win for them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, sometimes there's always nervous lawyers that you have to get.
They have
around.
No incentive to say no. It's just a risk. They get no benefit from, like, people laughing in a theater at something.
Yep.
Like, they just, like...
Furious
about
this.
You can't use that in a court of law.
No, these
but
people
enjoyed it. But it was funny in our defense.
Damn it.
It was funny.
The movie ends, it seems to end anyway, with Gwen somehow communicating with Miles.
It does.
Can you talk about that?
Well, it was interesting. You had a lot of different attempts at that last moment, and at times it kind of felt like a Twilight Zone ending. Like he thinks it's over, but guess what? It's not, and it left you with this kind of sour feeling, like he lost. And I think at that moment you want to feel like he completely won, and what better way to win than to feel like he has a lasting relationship that's going to continue past the movie? And we just loved their friendship and thought it was so strong and warm, and so it was a way to really feel like he earned, you know, he earned a friend, and that there's going to be further, you know, adventures between the two of them, which seems kind of nice.
There seems to be a bit of a time jump as well, a little bit of a time jump between the, you know, the end of the action part of the movie and the end of the movie. So
actually, in Chris's flash present,
that's right.
It's a bit of a flash forward.
It is. Yeah, that was sort of
it's
way
a bit
we just
technically.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had like everything in this movie. There were discussed ad nauseum the logic of things and various versions of it and. And Phil convinced me that it could be a jump ahead in time
because it's a montage and he talks about all the things he did.
Yes, and that moment comes after that little speech. So I don't know how far forward it is.
Could be 75 years.
It could be 75 years, yes. And he's immortal and doesn't age. There's your spoiler for you.
There's another. Yeah. There's another power.
Yeah,
there's
we cut power. Out the scene where he said, "And all my family are all died. I buried them."
You have already announced a sequel, and quite rightly so. And there's lots of other spider people out there.
It's like calling your own home run, isn't it? What do you say? How would you do that in cricket?
You would before the ball arrives, you would go six
wickets.
Yeah, you would point. It would same with baseball. You would point to where you're going to hit the ball.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
yes, and
you would do that.
It's a bit of that. It's a bit of that. Yeah.
Is the Tom Holland Spider-Man off limits, or is that something that
you
would look at?
I would say nothing is off limits. The beauty of the multiverse is that literally anything is possible. Any variation you can think of. We like to think that all of these movies and worlds can exist in parallel.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens.
Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Now we're talking.
There we go. That's it. And then the very last thing, if you can have any Spider-Man who's out there, there's Ben Reilly, there's all sorts of sorts of ones. Would you consider having a Spider-Man who fires webbing from his butt?
We've talked about this. At great length.
Well, I'll tell you, if you wanted to be anatomically correct, they actually they excrete silk from their abdomen, it turns out.
Right. So would that be
grosser somehow?
Do you think it's from the front? Like
it's like your belly button area?
How many inches beneath the belly button?
It has to be pretty far above the crotchal area for it to
not be. So it's not
be,
in like, the...
I mean, it's,
yeah, MPAA. The
exactly.
Region.
Exactly. I mean... There are so many things that spiders do that Spider-Man
that
doesn't
gross.
Do.
Like lay like thousands of eggs.
Yet have eight eyes and eight appendages and all these things you think.
I think we should definitely make Miles lay thousands of eggs and then a million miles has come out of him. I'd be into that. Oh. We did consider making that. I will say this, and I've discussed this with Jason Latour.
One of the creators of Spider-Gwen.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That he, who may or may not be working on something in this vein, that it comes out of his abdomen, the webs, and then there's an elaborate system of pulleys and winches that pull it out of his wrists.
Uh-huh. So there's a suit, like it's like...
Correct, under the suit.
Okay.
It's like one of those things where you you have like a catheter or something and the urine goes out through a tube.
That's it. The urine comes out through your wrists and you can shoot it at people. Everybody has one of those. So anyway, that was... that. I pitched it pretty hard to Jason.
Yeah.
And to see if he would make it canon. Yeah, he seemed a bit resistant.
Yeah, I guess so. Hmm.
But I think that's a great... I think it's a solution that works for everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't look like...
It doesn't look gross.
R-rated.
But he's hanging from his butt.
Totally fine.
Yeah. Mature audiences only.
But it makes more sense and it's more spider-like and more true to the anatomy of spiders.
Indeed.
He was bitten by a spider.
He was.
He was bitten by a radioactive pig...
Yeah, that's Spider Ham. Yes, it was a spider bitten by a radioactive pig.
But
he didn't get any pig powers. He just was, I guess, larger.
It feels inconsistent to me.
I know. It's a listen. If you try to understand
Spider Ham, you're gonna lose. That's the joy.
The message of it
is that you can't believe he exists.
Just go with it. That's the message.
That's it.
Oh man, it's been a pleasure.
This
it's been a pleasure.
Really fun. Can
it's
we
been a pleasure
keep
watching
going?
The sequel just take you know take
oh,
shape.
Oh yeah,
in front of
I
my
know.
Eyes.
You're
yeah.
gonna probably sue us for story credit on it, and rightfully so.
can I just suggest that the one the bad guy should be called the catheter? And,
oh yeah,
you know,
great idea.
But
yeah.
it's
catheter.
A cat.
It's one of
it's a feline.
One of Spider Ham's villains.
Obviously,
the cat
hater. But it's a. I don't know.
Yeah. This never happened in the Macquarie podcast.
No, this wasn't. This is right. Macquarie's bag.
Yeah.
He's. Yeah.
Well, I think we packed 6 hours of content into
there. We go.
Minutes.
Obviously,
that's our efficient.
Listen, you get a lot skills. Of value.
That's yeah, right.
For listening to this podcast.
And I think I've asked all my questions. Oh, no, wait, I haven't.
Oh, wait a minute. What do we got?
I haven't.
We could be here all day.
No, you guys gotta go.
We gotta go. We've gotta go. Important yeah, meeting
with Mr. Burger.
With Mr. Burger.
Mr. Cheeseburger.
Mr. Neil Hamburger.
All right. Sock it to us.
I thought I heard someone mention Venom. Did I?
Venom?
Yeah.
Well, we...
I think
we,
Peter B. Parker mentioned Venom.
Did he?
Well, there's a Venom strike.
Yes, the Venom
that
strike.
That is Miles, one of his special powers.
All right, so contextually yes. I did, but I got it wrong.
Yes, I mean yeah, that's the term for his yeah. zappy powers.
Yeah. You're making my wheels turn to see how.
Wait a second.
It could happen.
Wait a second. Venom teams up with the catheter.
Yes.
Venom.
Now there's a spin-off.
There's so many different Venoms.
I know. There's a lot of.
There's a
She
Venom.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of.
There's a Gwenom, right?
Yes. Gwenom.
Is there a Ham? There's a Venom. A Ham Venom.
Venham.
Venham. Venom.
Venom.
Yeah. That's
I'm
pretty
sure.
good.
I think if you're going to yeah. do a Venom, that it has yeah. to be Venom.
I think you're talking about 21 Jump Street production designer Peter Venom.
That's true. That's right. That's right.
That's probably what you mean.
Mm-mm. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to the co-writer and producers of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Venom Into the Venomverse.
Into the Venomverse is not enough.
And of course... The catheter, into the catheter verse.
Yes.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
This
Chris
has been good.
Miller.
Yes, Chris.
That's right.
And Chris Phil to Lord. Chris.
Yeah. We can Chris it up all day
we
long.
We will.
Oh, man.
Oh, and we will.
Guys, break it up, okay? I hate
it's
being
Christmas.
The third
oh,
wheel here.
Oh,
it's Christmas.
I'm sorry, you weren't invited to the Chris Club?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, man.
It's not
just
Phil Chris's. Mass.
Exactly.
I guess not.
Yeah, what holiday's named after you?
Farber Day?
On that bombshell.
There we go.
Veterans Day.
All right.
That's just in America.
And the 4th of July.
That's right.
Oh, very yeah, nice.
The 5th of July.
The 5th of July.
Thanks, right, guys. On that
one.
Bombshell. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
So that was Phil Lord and Chris Miller, or depending on who actually spoke first, Chris Miller and Phil Lord. And that was a lot of fun. You think, weirdly enough, let's get in, we have got some listener questions for this podcast, but you would think let's talk about amongst yourselves a little bit first. You would think that doing a spoiler special for an animated Spider-Man movie would be a bit redundant, that there wouldn't be an awful lot to spoil, there wouldn't be an awful lot of plot to get into or major plot shenanigans, but this movie's chock full of stuff to talk about.
It's a fantastic movie. It's not like, you know, cutesy animated for kids, for 3-year-olds and up sort of a movie. Sorry, Ada. This is a movie very much for like everybody, and probably only from about what, 7 or 8 up. Even then, like, there's some death, so you know, you'd have to be yeah. sure of your 7-year-old being kind of cool with that.
Yeah.
But it is a film that has so much kind of textural meat to it, so much character detail, so much. I mean, the animation is incredibly innovative, mm-hmm. but so is the storytelling, so is the way they presented the many, many spider worlds. And I think it's one of the first. I think it's one of the first comic book movies really anywhere outside possibly anime and things like Akira to really grapple with how weird comics can get and how, you know, completely out there all these iterations of a character or a theme or a notion can be. You know, obviously Doctor Strange certainly got into how weird looking comics could be, but I feel like this one is the first one to really explore all the weird corners of the Marvelverse and all its kind of different takes on essentially the same idea of a person or thing being bitten by a spider and or not, and having some powers that may or may not relate to some of those powers that a spider may or may not have, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
To boil it down really succinctly, like I just did.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think you were mentioning the animation style there, which is absolutely one of my favourite things about the film. But one of I think the thing that's great about it is that it's not just innovation for innovation's sake in that animation. It feels very tied into the concept of these different realities crashing together, and they're all the same, but they're all slightly different. And I love those moments where you have all these different forms of animation sharing the screen, like when Penny's on the screen and she's an anime character, and Spider-Man Noir is in black and white, but they're all in the same frame together. And I think, that kind of real shift in animation style feels so baked into the concept of Spider-Verse that they're not kind of separate things, that they are really tangled together. And I love that about the film.
I mean, it was very easy to be skeptical about this movie, wasn't it, when it was first announced? And I think we probably were, even though the presence of Lord Miller as producers was something to cling on to. Mm. But we were very skeptical about Venom whenever it was announced. And there's a lot of movies that aren't within the purview of the MCU that it's very easy to go, well, that doesn't sound that great, does it?
I don't remember this being announced. I only remember the trailer coming out.
It just arrived.
Yeah, and being quite astonished by that. So I don't remember any skepticism whatsoever. I remember seeing the trailer and being like, yes, I need this in my life, yes!
Mm. I think it was announced at the same time as the announcement that Tom Holland's Spider-Man was going to be introduced come into the MCU. So it was kind of, that was the big headline, and then it was like, oh, and also Sony are doing an animated one that's a cinema. And it was, I think we just didn't get a sense of what that was going to be, and I think people didn't massively trust Sony with that property just because of there was
Amazing
disappointment
Spider-Man
around too. Amazing Spider-Man. And the exciting thing about that whole announcement was Spider-Man joining the MCU, and this felt like a bit of an aside. And I think now that it's come out and you see what the vision of that of this project was always meant to be, it's just as exciting. And I think this is going to really actually kind of make it difficult for live action Spider-Man to live up to what this film does, because aside from the animation and the form and the style, even just on a like an action level and the shots of various Spider-Men and people kind of swinging through cities and the real propulsiveness and the exhilaration you get from those shots, all the things that you get in the live action Spider-Man films as well, this one does as good, if not even better. And I think the stage has kind of been set for Far From Home to have to try and not only outdo Homecoming, which is possibly still my favorite Spider-Man film, but kind of Spider-Verse is up there, but to kind of match up to what Spider-Verse has done.
I do think actually visually this is gonna set some bars higher, I think, for the live action, because obviously you can't do everything in live action that you can do in animation. That's the point of animation. You know, Pixar's motto has always been, why do we need to tell this story? Why is this an animated story as opposed to a live action one? And often the answer is because they're doing something that just wouldn't work in live action. Toys, it's just not going to be as cool. You could do it maybe stop motion, but why would you bother? That makes no sense. I think there's an element of, you can't do exactly what this film does with live action. You physically cannot do some of the shots that this film does in live action. But at the same time, you've got to get that sense of exhilaration and that sense of visual dazzle somehow into your Spider-Man films if you can. And that's going to be kind of an interesting challenge going forward. I think, you know, look, we've seen a series of superhero movies this year raising the bar, one after another, raising the bar, setting down a challenge. It's why something like Venom, okay, it performed fine at the box office, people watched it, but it felt so old, it felt so past it, because it couldn't match the storytelling, the visuals, the acting even, always, of a lot of these films that are coming out now. And I think we're in a real golden age, we've known that for a while, of superhero movies, but I think this is another... Hi, I loved it.
Yeah, this movie is fantastic, and it really pushes the envelope in a way. Like when you talk to Lord and Miller, and we got into a little bit more in depth in a Q&A I hosted with them as well, about how they basically had to rewrite the rule book in order to make this movie happen. So it's CG animation, but each frame is hand-drawn on top of that, so you have animators who are working furiously. They had to write new software to really push the envelope the way they wanted to push it. It wasn't possible to make this movie in the way that it presented 2 years ago, but I love the fact that it breaks new ground and it points a new way ahead for mainstream animation. Even Pixar, I think we talked about this in the podcast, the main podcast before, Helen, that even Pixar, there's a homogenization going on of animation at the moment where it's hard even to sometimes tell a Pixar movie apart from a DreamWorks animation movie, apart from an Illumination Entertainment animation.
I think they all
there's definitely shared DNA.
They all feel the same to me. And this is a movie that feels fresh and funky and presents stuff in a way that you haven't seen before. Mm. In a way that, you know, I think we got some questions coming in from listeners, and some of whom actually don't necessarily like this style of animation, and it does push it in an interesting direction. But I think hats off to them, hats off to the directors as well, Rodney Rothman and Peter Ramsey and Bob Persichetti, because they really have pushed this thing in an interesting direction that makes you think, oh my god. We know obviously these things are comic book movies. They have their origin in comic books, they have their origin in art and the printed page, and we know they work gangbusters on TV as animation, but I never really thought that I wanted to see an animated superhero movie until now, until this movie comes along. And I'm just thinking, if they're all as smart as this and if they're all as visually progressive as this, then bring them on.
Well, look, I mean, some of the best Batman movies, I'm sorry, are the animated ones.
Mask of the Phantasm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Red Hood, obviously, I have a soft spot for.
You do indeed.
As well. But this is it. There are certain stylistic things that you can do in these movies to get it closer to the comic book experience.
Yes.
And bring some of that to life and bring some of that texture to it as well. The texture of the animation here is just glorious, because it'll go from really realistic 3D CG to being able to see the texture of the page. It's magic. I just absolutely loved it.
It feels like you could feel the dots as well. You're reading a Marvel comic or any other comic, you know.
Other ones are available, Chris.
Other comic book companies do exist. From this, particularly from the 60s or 70s. It almost feels like an opening shot of the Comics Code Authority in a weird way. It's basically saying, okay, we're setting it up. This is more old-timey in terms of the texture of the comic, not in terms of the action that's taking place, because Miles Morales is a very modern character, a very modern take on Spider-Man. But I just loved it. And it feels old-timey while at the same time being the most new-timey thing you've ever seen on the big screen.
That Comics Code moment in the press screening, that got a cheer.
Really?
No, and like its own really loud cheer.
Yeah,
people were so excited about it.
Yeah.
But I've got a big book of Spider-Man comics, but it's with Jack Kirby's drawings, and you can see his line drawings, sort of him correcting as he goes. Huge, huge things. You can see all the detail. And it felt a lot like that with the hand-drawn detail around the edges of this one as well.
And also the style of the animation, as far as I can see to my unlearned eye, changes constantly through the movie. It refines and mutates and evolves throughout the movie. So when Miles gets bitten by the spider, it suddenly becomes more jerky in a weird way. And then at other times it becomes smoother as he begins to become in sync with his powers. And you're right, Helen, as well, talking about, you know, could this movie only be made as an animated film? And I think, because of the way that the different animation styles of Spider-Man Noir and Spider-Ham and Spider-Gwen all crash into each other, that could not work in a live-action setting. Yeah. And I was thinking during the film, aren't they going to go down the route of having the Tom Holland Spider-Man show up in this movie at some point? And how would that work? Would it be a Mary Poppins style, Who Framed Roger Rabbit style thing, where he's the only live action element in this animated world?
Oh my
world?
God, that would be amazing. You know? I want that for the sequel.
Yeah, but then again, because this is an animated movie, they don't know they're animated, right? So therefore, the Tom Holland one would have to be animated too, right?
Or maybe he'd be live action, but he'd be like the Deadpool.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Ben, would you like to see that? Like to see Tom Holland?
I would love that. And especially, I think there it's set up that there is a level of awareness, especially because Spider-Ham, when he says, oh, do animals talk in this dimension? I think they understand that they all come from very different places. So I think it feels very open for live action Tom Holland to step into that universe. I think that would be the way, if there's a way to kind of up the ante on this,
let's go even
further into it.
There's no way to top it, Ant-May. Disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Outrageous.
Honestly. Shall we move on to something else? All right. I think I've ruined that one. But if Tom Holland's iteration of Peter Parker, and we're talking about the Tom Holland who plays Spider-Man, of course, not Tom Holland the historian, or Tom Holland the director of Fright Night, or Tom Holland the guy who fixed James Dyer's roof. Very, very clear in this. Tom Holland, the guy who plays Spider-Man, if he were to show up in this movie, would that be one Peter Parker too many? Or do you think you can never have too many Peter Parkers? How many Peter Parkers is a preponderance of Peter Parkers? Or indeed, would you, if you will, a plethora of Peter Parkers?
Would you say I had a plethora of Peter Parkers? No, I think this was pretty good, but much the right level of Peter Parkers, at least for one movie. Because, you know, he is the original Spider-Man, and it's sort of, you know, you were saying just a few months ago, I think, when we talked about this, he's your Spider-Man. Like, you appreciate that Miles Morales exists, but it's Peter Parker. That's your Spider-Man.
Yeah, just because I'm old.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, therefore, having two Peter Parkers kind of makes sense. And I liked that one was the sort of young, more heroic, more on top of it Peter Parker, the Chris Pine Peter Parker. We now have all four movie Chris's. Come on! And yeah, and then you also have the slightly, you know, flabbier reflection of Peter Parker, and the sense that, you know, even the great hero, even the Spider-Man, you know, there is a scenario, there is a universe, there is a possibility where he really can't keep juggling all the things that he tries to juggle, and he really does have to lose something that he can't cope with losing, you know, because that's always been his dilemma. That's always been Peter Parker's dilemma in particular. He's the, you know, he's the original superhero whose life was made worse by his superpowers. And he was trying to juggle school, girlfriend, aunt, work, other jobs, you know, and it never, ever worked. And heroism. It never, ever worked for him. And it's kind of, there's something quite pure in a way of seeing a version of him that acknowledges that it is really impossible to do that, and that maybe it doesn't work out for him. And yet, obviously, he's Peter Parker, so, you know, at the end of the film, he goes back to try again, which is great.
But because he's Peter Parker, we just expect that he will fail at some point.
No, he is going to be reconciled with MJ at the end of the film. Come on, Chris, have some belief.
All right, sure, sure. Sure, Helen. I was wondering at one point whether he was going to stick around in this universe and plant one on this version, this newly widowed version of MJ.
She's far too young for him. We've had this conversation.
Does it matter in animation?
Yes.
I mean, it's only, what, a 15-year age gap?
Ew.
She can probably do better, to be honest.
She could do better.
Probably wants her, but she can do better.
I mean, that's the whole thing about MJ, though, isn't it? She can always do better.
This is very, very true. We'll get on to the Peter Parkers in more detail in a second, but this is Miles Morales' story.
Yeah.
And I love this character. I'll be honest, I haven't been keeping up with Spider-Man in the way that I once did, and I'm not as au fait with the character as I am Peter Parker. So I was pleasantly surprised by Miles in this. He's a variation on the old theme, but a lovely one.
I think one of the things that the film does really, really well, on top of all the crazy stylistic and out there and universe crashing stuff going on, that it does his origin really well without just feeling like a rote origin story, and it unfurls his character and his background and his powers, which are quite different to Peter Parker's, kind of through the course of the film. It's an introduction to Miles that doesn't just feel like a straight origin story, but it feels really fresh, and he's playing off this other version or these other versions of Spider-Man that you know and you've seen in all these other incarnations. I think it has that wonderful like feeling of familiarity and feeling totally new at the same time. And I, as somebody who, like, I read bits and pieces of comics here and there, but I haven't followed them through the years, and I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know that he had such a different skill set of powers, like the invisibility and that kind of stuff. So those moments where that kind of pops into the scenario took me by surprise in a really fun way. It just felt like constant delight and invention and surprise. And I really like that with his character.
I'll tell you actually where I know Miles Morales from more than the comic books is Marvel Puzzle Quest, which is a game I play religiously on my phone. It's a really fun, really addictive game, and Miles Morales is a player in that. So one of his powers is invisibility. Another one is the sort of venom sting type thing he does. So that's how I knew he had those powers, not from reading those comic books. The one or two, but Miles, he feels fresh. He feels new. He also feels important. He's a biracial character. One of the screenings I went to of this movie, it was really, really wonderful to see how many young black people were out watching the film and watching a Spider-Man who speaks to them in a way that Peter Parker never did.
It's also just a really likable, charming character. Very, you know, it's a really sweet depiction of a teenager and a really relatable depiction of a teenager. And, you know, he's full of all the sort of, you know, conflicted feelings towards his family, where he absolutely needs them. He, you know, their love is sort of the bedrock of his whole sort of life. But at the same time, he's kind of trying to pull away and establish himself as an independent, growing up, tough guy. And that's a really charming and relatable sort of scenario to be in. His relationship with his family, I think was just great and really well drawn, even in just a couple of little scenes. His body language, you know, the sort of teenage awkwardness, the sort of folding in on himself and gradually learning to, like, mm-hmm. move his shoulders back and down a little bit and become more like a sort of confident person. And obviously, you know, his whole arc with his dad in particular was great. But also this sense of trying to figure out who you are, trying to code switch, I think, at his new school. You know, he doesn't fit in. He's trying to get himself pulled out to somewhere where he feels more comfortable. But actually, you know, he's a really bright guy. He's where he should be. And I loved the little tiny scene of his teacher essentially telling him that, you know, the only way you can do this badly on this test is by knowing the answers. This is where you're supposed to be, kind of thing. And I think, again, by the end of the film, he's gradually beginning to sort of sense that he might have a place there and he might be able to fit in. Mm. Through the help, I think, of the other Spider-Man's persons, mm-hmm. because being around a whole bunch of other incredibly gifted, I'm assuming in the case of Spider-Ham, people is kind of good for him to sort of see that he belongs among them and he has a place among them and he can fit in.
I think as well, the spider persons, the spider people, they're all like vastly different to each other as well. And I think I love that message that they are all spider people, but they are all very distinct and that they relate to each other through the shared thing that they have. But I think that he learns that he can be an individual as well as he can be himself and be
Spider-Man. We're all individuals.
The other thing on a much shallower level, I just like that he was cool. Like, Peter Parker is
a dweeb.
Nerdy and anxious and
kicks
and
hand in that motherfucker's face. Yeah. Sorry, Ada. That's the third F.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
That poor child.
She'll have to turn off now. I'm sure she made it this far.
Yeah, you watch Peter Parker, you can absolutely see why Flash Thompson would just want to pummel him. Mm-hmm. Pummel his stupid,
oh
nerdy,
my god, you're so
specky
mean.
Face.
And like Tom...
I wear glasses. I should point that out.
And me. And Helen does.
And Beth. Yes, all of us.
And Helen's not wearing glasses today because she hurt her knee.
What?
Okay.
Please continue.
Okay. Even Tom Holland's Peter Parker, who has a little bit more... He is quite
the
trendy.
Historian.
No, Tom Holland...
The director.
The other Tom Holland...
The roof repairman.
No, not that one.
The footballer.
The other
Tom... Oh, good.
Hey.
There's another one?
There's another one, yeah.
Tom Holland into the Hollandverse.
Yeah,
there's... on the way.
Well, they all come together. Not that way. Keep it clean, guys.
Basically, I was just saying that Miles Morales is really cool and he's got a Chance the Rapper poster on his wall and he's got an amazing pair of Nike Jordans, which are being made in real life, and I think they would probably look terrible on me, so I probably won't buy a pair, but they are really cool and I'm jealous that he lives in a world where Chance the Rapper's fourth album is out. There are like fake posters for things.
And
I'm
not sure. Did you see Dusk Till Sean?
Yeah, yes. Edgar Wright put out there From Dusk Till Sean. There's like a fake The Weeknd poster as well. All these nods that just feel like it makes that character feel really authentic and different.
Yeah, those were really awesome. Also, by the way, did you notice anytime anyone's scrolling through their phone looking for a contact, pretty much all the contacts, or not all of them, but many of the contacts are Spider-Man writers of old, or artists and the like. It's a lovely little way to nod, not just to Stan Lee, although there's a beautiful moment for him as well, but to have that nod to the wider kind of Marvel family.
Absolutely, yeah. You see the likes of in that phone. I think there's a Stan Lee reference in that phone as well. But just Steve Ditko is in there.
Kirby, there's Bendis as well.
Absolutely, they're all in there, all of them. But yeah, there's also a Seth Rogen movie that I've seen this movie a couple of times now, and I can never remember what it's called. But it's something like Keeping. I don't know. It's a generic Seth Rogen-y type of things. But apparently these were all done with the respect and with the okay and approval of the filmmakers. So From Dusk Till Dawn, which is the much mooted in jest Shaun of the Dead sequel. You can see a poster for that in Times Square. It's just lots of little layers here as well. And you're right, like, Miles is also, you know, Peter Parker would never be throwing graffiti up onto a subway platform or slapping stickers onto signs, or, you know, just showing those little moments of rebellion that, you know, he doesn't want to be put into that box that society wants to put him into. And that's really interesting blooming for that character, I think. And also, it really plays in nicely to, the film's big twist. Actually, I'd say there's two big twists in this film. Correct me. You may think there's a third. Okay. You may disagree with my twist. First twist is that his uncle is the Prowler. Yeah. Did anyone see that coming, first of all? And secondly, the other big twist is that the first Peter Parker we meet, he gets deadified.
I did guess about his uncle, although not immediately, but before he turns up in the suit.
Did you guess he was a baddin?
I guess he was that character about maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes before.
Really?
Yeah.
But sure, you're working out, Helen O'Hara.
I honestly don't remember it because I've only seen it once. I would like to go see it again. In fact, I'm going to see it again multiple times, but unfortunately the timing hasn't worked out. But no, I just thought it would make more sense. It would make most sense if he was his uncle.
Yeah, I thought he was up to no good in terms of whenever he gets a phone call.
Yeah,
in
you knew that immediately.
The tunnel.
I think. Yeah.
But I didn't think he was working for the Kingpin, and I certainly didn't think he was a Prowler. I think I figured it out about 10 minutes after it was revealed. I went, why is he wearing the Prowler suit? Wait a minute. So that's a pretty big twist. So obviously fans of the comic book will know that twist. Fans, again, of Marvel Puzzle Quest will know that twist because the Prowler, the Aaron Davis iteration, is a playable character on Marvel Puzzle Quest. It is available through the App Store.
And this, by the way, does this prove that it's not the MCU? Because, of course, we had him played by Donald Glover already in the MCU.
The Prowler?
No, his uncle.
His uncle. Oh my God. And there's another Prowler, two Prowlers, in fact, in Homecoming. So
there you go.
Yeah. So this is not the MCU. That's fine. That is definitive. But that's a very, very good point, Helen.
You're welcome.
He mentions
his nephew at some point as well.
Holy shit.
This blows the thing wide open, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does.
So why is he Davis if he's his... Never mind.
It's his mum is Morales. His dad is Davis. His dad was a baddin who hung around with his uncle and did bad things.
Gotcha.
Worked for the Kingpin back in the day. In protest about that, his mum, who had custody of Miles, gave him her name. And then when his dad turned over a new leaf, Jefferson turned over a new leaf and obviously became a cop and went very, very straight indeed.
Gotcha.
The name stuck anyway. Okay. So he's Miles Morales. And also, as someone else pointed out, otherwise he'd be Miles Davis.
That'd be pretty awesome.
That'd be pretty cool.
Question about the Chris Pine thing.
Yes.
What I will say is I was sitting there thinking, God, he sounds a lot like Chris Pine, but I know this character isn't Chris Pine. I know he's Jake Johnson. So it's so weird that Jake Johnson sounds so much like Chris Pine. Gosh, I'm surprised by that. And my sister was literally whispering in my ear the whole time going, that's Chris Pine. And I'm like, no, I think it's Jake Johnson. It just sounds like Chris Pine. But yeah, so I was kidding myself about the voice so that the death did come as a surprise.
That's interesting. I think I saw the death in because I saw the first 37 minutes. They showed it at the London Comic Con a couple of months ago, and I saw the first 37 minutes there, and I thought it was fantastic. I didn't put the voice and the character together at all. I just didn't think Chris Pine would pop up in this universe, even if it's not technically speaking this universe. I think he's really, really cool. The idea behind that Peter Parker, as you may have heard in the interview, is that he's a sort of uber Peter Parker, that he is the ultimate Spider-Man, but not Ultimate Spider-Man. It gets confusing. Anyway, but, you know,
he's the super, super duper Peter Parker.
Yeah. He's like the apotheosis of what this character can be. Like, he's young. He looks like he's got abs. Yeah. He doesn't love pizza.
He sounds like Chris Pine.
He looks, he's, you know.
Like Chris Pine.
He looks like Chris Pine. He is endlessly heroic, even at the end when he has, I presume, a broken back or something. He is still defiant in the face of the Kingpin and his big fist. And, you know, he has an Aunt May who has evolved well beyond the other Aunt Mays, and she's built this incredible spider cave and all sorts of stuff and spider gadgets. But it still surprised me. I'll be honest, I was expecting him to come back at some point.
Yeah, I guess it works better that he didn't, because then it puts the pressure on Miles to be the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's really hard for me to talk about these multiple Spider-Mans without singing the song from Kimmy Schmidt, which
What's
Titus sings. It's a song from Spider-Man 2, the musical sequel Spider-Man 2, Too Many Spider-Men. And it's kind of the title song. And I highly recommend just Google Titus Andronicus or Kimmy Schmidt.
Can you give us a bar? Give us two bars.
And I will crush that Spider-Man and then that other Spider-Man till I'm the Spider-Man, etc. It's amazing.
Brilliant. Wow.
He doesn't much better than I do. I'd like to make
that took
clear.
A turn. Didn't it?
Sorry,
that took a turn. But you like this? You like the fact that the Chris Pine Spider-Man ended up in a Chris Pine box?
Oh, that's really harsh. I mean, I don't like. I didn't hope for it, but like.
You wanted it. You campaigned actively. You printed out leaflets. There was a flyer.
Kill Spider-Man, yeah. I said.
It's a flash mob.
No, I just think dramatically it works well in terms of Miles' development because this is Miles' story.
And I didn't mind either as well because he was blonde. It was weird having a blonde Spider-Man. I can live in a world where there's a Spider-Ham, where there is an anime teen girl spider person who has a spider robot. Blonde Peter Parker?
Oh my
is that
racist.
Is that a thing?
Ben, no. Ben is the only person keeping alive the website bondnotblonde.com when Daniel Craig was announced.
History will prove me right.
Okay.
Spidermannotblonde.com yeah. will soon be following.
Just to see Ben ranting about this. Yeah, I thought it was a lovely little touch, and I thought, you know, but gradually the story does become Miles as that goes along. And I also like the fact we only got to see that Spider-Man really once, apart from that chazzy, funky, hey, let me go through this one last time. Of course, we got to see those lovely shout-outs to Spider-Man 3 and Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
Oh my God, so funny.
So good.
Yeah, really, really fun. I think I didn't get a chance to ask Lord and Miller List, largely because, what was the reason? Oh yeah, I forgot. But why all the Spider-Men / spider people / spider pigs show up in this universe at the same time? And it's because he goes through the dimensional rift.
Yeah, it's because his face is basically pushed into the rift at one point in the middle of the fight. And that's the DNA signature or whatever it is that then calls all these people here.
Yeah.
So it's the same plan that the Kingpin is planning to use to bring back Vanessa and his son, is to put some of their DNA basically into the vortex. And that
bringing
is going to bring them
back. At which point he would have a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Yeah, it would seem. But, I mean, when has the Kingpin ever been reasonable about Vanessa?
Vanessa!
Vanessa!
He's a bit of a prick. We can say prick in a PG-13 podcast.
Okay, I guess.
You can't say fuck.
Oh, jeez.
You can't drop the fuck button.
Ben.
The Kingpin was interesting. I didn't spot it was Liev Schreiber at all.
No.
I didn't know that, so...
He put on 400 pounds for the role.
God forbid, he's perfect as he is. I didn't recognise his voice. It didn't ring a bell with me at all. So that was a surprise in the credits.
No, but it doesn't surprise me that they would get someone like that to to voice Kingpin. He's got a great voice. He's just got one of those fantastic voices. He is a New Yorker as well, I think, so that would come naturally to him. But because the Kingpin wants to get back at Spider-Man, you would just go to Mr. Schreiber because, as we all know, living well is the best revenge.
Oh, wait, that was such a long setup for so little payoff.
I've heard that before. If you've been speaking to my wife.
Yes.
Oh, God, I'm in trouble now. Anyway, here we go. Should we get some questions?
Let's do it.
Or is there anything else you want to talk about this movie?
So I will say that I didn't see the Uncle Twist coming, just to go back to that.
Yeah.
It's the second Spider-Man film that had a twist where the baddie is related to a good character that you've already met and you don't realise it. It's the Homecoming twist all over again, which also took me massively by surprise. The other big twist, I'd say, if you're saying there's potentially third, is the Doc Ock reveal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That took me by surprise, and that was... I loved that moment. I really loved the iteration of the character, and you were saying that the sort of surprise when you see the credits, and that was Catherine Hahn.
Yeah.
When the credits were coming at the end, it was a constant kind of, oh, that was that person, and that who this was this. I actually didn't know that they hadn't announced most of that stuff before the film came out. They'd managed to keep it all under wraps.
Mm.
The Doc Ock reveal really worked for me. And again, it's all these little moments all the way through that just add energy and excitement to the story and to this version and new twists on things that are familiar. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the pacing of it was great because when that Doc Ock reveal comes, it's everything's already kind of ramped up to a certain point, but it just pushes it into the next gear, kind of action wise, story wise, character wise.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, really loved that moment. That I found that more surprising than Peter Parker dying, because that felt like a very sort of organic part of where the story comes from. I think because I went into it knowing that it was going to be Miles' story, that I didn't expect there to be a Peter Parker at the center of it.
And because Peter Parker dies in the universe, the Ultimates universe, where Miles becomes Spider-Man, that's his storyline. Yeah. You know, he takes over from Peter Parker initially anyway, then all sorts of craziness happens as well. I guess we should have known that Peter A. Parker, I'm going to call him, he died because in the 5 minutes of this movie that was tacked on to the end of Venom, it's Miles visiting Peter's grave. So I guess we should have figured that one out.
Probably should have spotted that when you
should have spotted that.
I didn't stay through the credits of Venom. That's right. I let down the whole comic book universe by not staying through the credits of the film.
Did you stand up and go, harumph, this is not for me.
Not for me. Goodbye.
All right, we're going to take some questions now. Theo Fisher, 11, asks, can we put the ghost of Spider-Man 3 to rest now that the gun fingers scene has been hilariously dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, we weren't around to do spoiler specials for Spider-Man 3, were we?
No.
And it was... it was a film with many good ideas that shouldn't have had Venom tacked onto the end of it, let's be honest. It was a film that just... it should have been weird, and it wasn't allowed to be weird, and it just didn't work. So, yeah, I think we can now just move past it. Let's move past Amazing Spider-Man's as well, and just move on with our lives, and just rejoice in the two Spider-Men we now have who are doing well and looking good.
Tom Holland.
Although we don't currently have him, I suppose, technically.
Who?
Tom Holland.
Oh, no, we don't. No, that guy's dust. Dost?
Dost.
He's dost. That guy's dost.
Both dust and toast.
It's like, dust? You ever had dust toast? It's the best. Really, really tasty. Yeah, that guy's toast. Here's another question. This one comes from James S. Wilson. Which of the spider people do you think you are? And why is James Dyer Spider-Man Noir?
He's Spider-Ham.
Is he though?
No.
He's Spider-Man Noir on the outside, Spider-Ham on the inside, I think.
By the way, I love John Mulaney as Spider-Ham. I just love his sort of 1940s voice. I just think it's the greatest thing in the world.
That's John Mulaney's normal voice, isn't it?
I don't know what is his default, but it's amazing. If you haven't seen Kid Gorgeous on Netflix or any of his other specials, please seek them out. You're going to enjoy it so much. I'm obviously my kinsman, Miguel O'Hara.
Okay, let's get into it now. Let's talk about it. Okay, so the
post-credit sting.
Post-credit sting, yeah. Which is Spider-Man 2099.
Yep.
Interesting person number one is Oscar Isaac as Miguel O'Hara.
Yeah.
Now, I love this comic book. Peter David wrote it years and years and years and years and years and years and years ago when Marvel tried a 2099 universe. Tell us about Miguel O'Hara. He's closest to the actually firing webs out of his arse, isn't he?
What?
Like spiders do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Although, as Lord Miller explained, actually, they fire them out from their chest, not from their arse.
Yeah.
But it's the abdomen that they fire them out from. And your
abdomen
is in your frontal region, not your back.
Not the butt.
Yeah, not
good
the butt.
Good Lord. So he's a geneticist, Chris. He's, like, intelligent and stuff.
Duh.
Yeah, obviously. And yeah, okay, so it's the usual, you know, strength, speed, agility of a spider. Basically had half his DNA rewritten with the spider's genetic code, and increased vitality, resistance to injury, the whole thing. But he apparently doesn't have a spidey sense. Is that right?
I got my spidey senses tingling. I can't remember, but no, probably not.
Great.
He good does costume, though.
Yeah, good costume and enhanced vision and spinnerets in his forearms, so it's an organic web slinger.
Yes,
which
yes.
I mean, I know this is not canon. I know it's not allowed, but I always liked that about the Raimi films. It felt elegant to me, mm-hmm. whereas the mechanical thing just seems like, oh, okay, so you got bitten by a spider and you developed spider abilities, but also you happen to have developed a formula for that enables you to throw webs. It's like it just feels a bit. It feels a bit clumsy as a piece of storytelling. So I always quite like organic web slingers anyway. So yeah, he can, I don't know, he's good. I like him.
He's good.
But I'll be honest, mostly I like him because his name is Miguel O'Hara. And
yes.
We don't have that many, we really don't have that many superheroes, you know, in my family. We've obviously got Scarlett O'Hara, who's a hero in her own way.
I guess, yeah.
Sure.
Catherine O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara, who's definitely a hero. Monsignor O'Hara from the Sister Act movies, who is, of course, Maggie Smith's boss, so he must be pretty badass.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, a proper superhero, it's exciting.
Ben, any superhero Travises? There's Nancy Travis, obviously, but she's not technically a superhero.
I mean, not really superhero. I'm trying to think of surnames as well. There's lots of Travis forenames. Travis Knight. He's not a superhero, but he's a
or
super
Knight.
Good filmmaker.
Yes, yes.
Who else?
The band, Travis.
The band, Travis. The man who It's a good 90s throwback.
Banger after banger, mate.
Yeah, great. What else have we got?
Why does it always rain on me?
It's because you lied when you were 17, Chris.
I did many things when I was 17, Ben.
What about you? Are there any? Who are the famous Hewitts?
I mean, there's really not that many. There's the Leighton, Jennifer Love. Obviously, Jennifer Love. You gotta love Jennifer Love. And me. Right.
As a C. Hewitt.
Yeah.
Did you invent Chewits?
Keep talking, Ben.
I feel like I might be about to be phased out here.
So Helen, it's just me and you now.
What a shame.
No, I'm putting you back up, Ben. There you go.
I'm back.
Yeah. Graham Wright asks, just a couple of last questions. Graham Wright asks, see, this is what I was talking about, the animation. The jokes and story, albeit very weird, was so good that the unusual animation was a bit of a distraction. Did you have to look around the screen to check if anyone else was wearing 3D glasses? This is not out of the ordinary. This has happened quite a lot. In fact, the animation style is almost, I know this again from talking to Lord Miller, is almost deliberately styled in that way. It's retraining us in a way. It's teaching us how to look at the frame. So they will almost make parts of the frame blurry at times to point your eye towards where it needs to focus. It's really, really very clever. But I think for some people, I've seen other people saying this as well, that they thought it just looks like a 3D movie that people forgot to bring their glasses to. But I think after about 10, 15 minutes, your eye begins to accept the norm, right?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's a little bit like reading comic books in a way, because I think some people, remember I was talking to one friend, I can't remember exactly who, I have a suspicion, but I'm not going to name names in case I'm wrong. But one friend had real trouble reading comic books because he didn't really look at the images when he read them. He'd just read the speech bubbles. And so it made sense, but it was very unsatisfying as a way of reading, and he'd find it really off-putting. And you almost have to retrain your eye to read the image as well as the dialogue, you know. So I think there's an element of maybe that going on. Or it's like going to a Shakespeare play and it takes you 10 minutes to get your ear in and understand what's going on with the language. And then once you've done that, once you've kind of adjusted, then everything else is fine. Even if you don't understand a specific phrase, you kind of get what's going on. And it's a bit like that with this animation. But in a good way, in a really, really good way. I think it's worth getting into it because I think there's so much being added to the story, being added to what you're feeling by some of these tricks and touches.
I liked it as well. I think it felt like a bit of a nod to the fact that this is just we in our universe are seeing into another universe, and it looks the same, but it looks slightly off. Or like, I've only seen the film once at the moment, but I'd be intrigued to watch it again and see if those moments, if they stand out more when you're kind of immersed in Miles's world rather than when all the other stuff's going on, because that felt like a nod of just kind of, here's a universe that's the same but it's slightly different, and we're revealing that through this kind of slight where it looks like you should be wearing the kind of old style green red kind of polarized 3D glasses. Personally, I'm really glad it wasn't in 3D. I don't know if that was part of the question or not, because I think that would be an extra layer
too much.
And I think part of the beauty of the animation is giving you those 3D textures within 2D animation. The switching of those different layers of animation, often within the same scene, is part of the like really lovely visual design of it all.
You know, you got to watch this in a new way. This is a new thing. You got to watch it in a new way. And I really like that about it. Also, one of the things I loved about it was how funny it was.
So funny.
It's emotional. It's moving. It's thrilling. It goes full batshit fucking it goes full batshit Ditko insanity in the last 20 minutes or so, in a way that you're thinking, well, could they have done this in a live action? No, they couldn't have. It would have been green screen jamboree. But I loved how funny it was as well. It's a very, very funny film.
We've mentioned the end tag and what it means of bringing in Miguel O'Hara and stuff, but the thing, as somebody, I recognise that character because I know that design, but I honestly, that's so funny. The Spider-Man meme, the pointing meme. My face was aching. You saw me afterwards. A grin was just stuck on my face. I was doubled over laughing. I think this and Homecoming are two of the just all-out funniest films of the last couple of years. They are two of the funniest comedies that aren't even, that's not even the main genre that they're playing into. They both really tickle me, and this especially, it was so full Lord and Miller in a way that I hadn't quite expected. And I think in a year where we had Solo, that I know a lot of people really enjoyed, but it felt like in Solo I was looking for those moments of kind of sort of
Lord
inspiration, the Lord and Miller moments, yeah, of kind of that either bit of genius inspiration or the really funny moments, and you felt it in little bits here and there, and then this was so full strength.
Yeah,
like it's crazy, but it's crazy smart and really funny because it's so well thought out. I don't know. It's, yeah, yeah.
It is really well thought. I mean, just the little scene with Miles and his dad through the door, and he can't talk to his dad because he's literally tied up and gagged, but his dad knows he's there and is sort of talking to him, and they can't communicate, but they are kind of, there is a breakthrough there anyway, and it's just beautifully, beautifully played. Just the cleverness of that scene is something else. But yeah, it's also the Lord Miller freaking hilarity. And even, you know, the traditional Stan Lee cameo, one of the last ones, and of course the first one we've seen since he died. And then that moment in the middle of the credits where they just stop for him.
And Steve Ditko.
It was just a beautiful little touch. And a really, you know, self-deprecating, funny cameo as well, you know, sort of making fun of his own kind of commercial instincts as well a little bit. Yeah. Going, no, you can't bring it back. It'll fit. It's fine. Always fits.
Yeah. But also really touching as well. Just
really,
you know, like,
touching.
You know, we were friends once, and yeah, it was touching whenever I saw it in the first 37 minutes before he died. And then after he died, it seemed to take on some sort of new emotional significance.
Yeah.
And the rest of the movie is really moving as well. The relationship between, as you say, Miles and Jeff, his dad, is really interesting. And doesn't go down the... I was desperately hoping they wouldn't go down the route of he becomes like the JJJ of this universe in a way,
I know.
And is swearing to bring down Spider-Man at all costs. And I'm so glad that at the end there was some sort of reconciliation there between the cop and the vigilante.
Yeah. Also, what a year is Brian Tyree Henry having? My God.
Yeah.
He's doing pretty well for himself. And long may it continue, because he's doing pretty well for us as well.
Last question comes from at Paul F. O'Regan. When Gwen met Miles, why did she use a fake name? The whole thing about her coming back a week in the past and knowing to find Miles didn't make a lick of sense. I guess they just wanted her in the movie early.
I think the week in the past makes total sense to me, because dimensional travel, yada yada, timey-wimey stuff.
Yeah, it's
big,
why you can
wibbly,
have a
wobbly ball,
42-year-old, you know, Peter Parker and a 26-year-old Peter Parker, and they both sound different.
Exactly.
And a 1930s Peter Parker who sounds really different and has the best lines in the movie.
He was hilarious. The him with the Rubik's Cube,
yes,
was genius.
I loved,
is that purple? No.
The constant wind that's going on around,
yes,
him. And there's a moment where Spider-Ham is on Spider-Man Noir's shoulder, and his and Spider-Ham's ears are like flowing in the breeze because he's on Spider-Man Noir. He is also in that bubble where the breeze,
yes,
is. It's,
yeah,
so good.
It's so, yeah, good. Yeah, so it totally makes sense to me that she'd come through a week early. That's kind of timey-wimey stuff. Totally fine. And the fact is they all react to each other when they meet. There is the sort of spider tingle when all of them meet. So it I didn't have a problem with that, actually. It sort of made sense.
Yeah. I guess he didn't have it. Miles didn't have it when he meets her after he's been bitten. Which, by the way, is another thing, that another clue to Aaron being the Prowler. Like, how did he know to take him to that particular tunnel? Because,
yeah,
he'd been there the night before, presumably working for the Kingpin. But but then again, Miles has that flop sweat and has other things to worry about, trying to impress this hot girl that he's really, you know, connecting with. And the shoulder touch was a lovely thing as well. Hey. Don't try it at home, kids. Miles Morales is a professional.
Yeah, you can say it working better for Mahershala Ali than for Miles.
Or indeed anyone else, pretty much. I have another idea about the Gwen thing.
Okay.
There's another Gwen Stacy in this universe. And presumably, right?
Yeah.
Because she's coming from, you know, everyone's coming from a world where there's a Peter Parker, pretty much.
Seems like,
there's
maybe
a Peter Porker and a Peter Parker and a Peter B. Park. So presumably, there is also a Gwen Stacy in this universe that Miles Morales hasn't met yet, so if she's going around sending Gwen Stacy and then he meets another one, who knows?
Fair enough.
Works for me?
Sure. Yeah.
Works for me. All right, final question. Who's favourite Spider-Man? Go.
Penny Parker's robot, specifically. When it had the little sad face on it, that was the most heartbreaking part of the film for me.
I'm going to say Spider-Man Noir because I've just remembered him with the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. Just everything he does and everything he says is just genius.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure Nick Cage knew they were recording the film. They just go out and... And wave microphone
how good
face.
Is it that this year he's been Spider-Man and Superman at such long last?
What a banner year for him.
What a year.
But he hasn't played Banner. Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. My favorite, you know what? I like them all. I like them all equally.
Fence-sitting bastard, honestly.
That's me, and that is it for this Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse Spider-Spoiler Spider Special. Our next spoiler special, we've got a whole ton of them coming up, is going to be for Aquaman with director James Wan, spilling the aqua beans on that. Following that, we're going to have Travis Knight. He's not a hero, but he is a knight. And that's going to be Bumblebee, and that'll be up sometime before New Year's Day. I need to sleep at some point, guys. But it'll be up at some point. Regular podcast is out every Friday, as ever. We also got a Review of the Year podcast, which will be going up on Friday the 28th of December. Busy, busy times. Anyway, until we meet again, it is goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Goodbye.
It is goodbye from Ben Travis.
Whip. Goodbye.
Wow, he's just gone. He's out the window. And it's goodbye from me. I am off to once again live up to the maxim. With great ability comes great accountability. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.